Were those forced smiles as world leaders gather in China for an economic summit? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. There was a new wave of market volatility in China today, with the key index on the Shanghai Exchange falling 6%, the biggest one-day drop in a month. It happened right as financial leaders from 20 of the world's largest economies, the G20, were gathered for a big meeting in Shanghai. China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is there, and he joins us now. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
China, at some level, the perfect backdrop in these economically turbulent times to hold a summit like this. China's economy must be on everyone's mind, regardless of which country they come from. What are they thinking about it?
Well, I think they're a little nervous. And, you know, in today's stock market plunge certainly underscored some of those concerns. But, you know, this is the G20 and China is graciously hosting it. So there were many forced smiles. One of the big questions the world's top financial officials here have is whether or not China will help drive global economic growth now that its economy is looking a little shaky. And as luck would have it, China's top central bank officials were on deck to do their best to reassure everyone. Here's Deputy Governor of the People's Bank of China, Yi Gang.
We still have to have a robust growth rate. And also, we want to keep the exchange rate is more or less stable. A stable situation is good for everybody.
So the deputy head of China's central bank stating, I think, the obvious. Did G20 members buy that?
They listened politely, but this was an audience filled with the world's most powerful central bankers. So they certainly know that China's growth isn't as robust as it used to be. And they also know the exchange rate for China's currency has not been stable in the past couple of months. Luke Spajic, an executive at PIMCO China, pointed this out and was a bit more frank, I would say, in his assessment of China's currency, saying that all the money leaving China in the past year shows clearly that the renminbi is undervalued.
When you see this degree of capital outflow in one calendar year, you know there's an imbalance. And this imbalance means that there is likely to be some kind of currency valuation adjustment going forward. In other words, the price right now just doesn't feel right.
Many economists believe we'll see further devaluation of China's currency this year, and that, of course, will have a big impact on trade, making Chinese exports to the U.S. cheaper and imports into China more expensive, making American products harder to sell to Chinese consumers.
Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz at the G20 summit in Shanghai. Rob, thank you.
Thanks, David.
So Shanghai down 6%, but Hong Kong, the larger, more established market, was down 1.6%. The FTSE in London is up 2.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up by 0.2%. There are published reports today that Apple is working on software that would make it even harder, if not impossible, for law enforcement to view information on an iPhone, even with a court order. Apple has resisted efforts by the FBI to search a phone once used by one of the San Bernardino mass murderers. But Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood says this is about future cases.
What Apple may be trying to do is lay the groundwork for a situation where if the government or any government ever comes back to them in the future and asks something similar, can you please break into this phone? Their answer can be technologically, no. Because what's making this difficult now is that technologically speaking, they could do it. They would have to write new software and, as they have said, sort of hack the existing phone. But it could create a situation, and this is interesting, where even if Apple is forced to turn over new code, they're forced to write a sort of skeleton key that will break into this older phone, that skeleton key itself could become invalid. If any future government got a hold of it, which is what Apple's worried about, it wouldn't work.
On ABC last night, Apple CEO Tim Cook compared creating software to crack into iPhones with creating a piece of cancer. What do we think we know about 20 and 30-somethings in 2016? They like coffee shops, public transit, and living in the city. The suburbs are out. That's the zeitgeist. But the numbers tell a different story as 20 and 30-somethings move out of gentrifying city neighborhoods and head for the burbs. Nova Safo reports from Chicago.
The walls in Tommy Choi's downtown Chicago office are covered in pop art, and Choi himself looks nothing like a traditional realtor.
How many colors are you wearing right now?
Five different colors.
Especially purple. Choi's image is designed to appeal to his mostly millennial clientele in their 30s. And he says many are coming to him with big life changes.
Having kids, thinking about things like school districts, where their kids are going to go to.
Choi says his millennial clients also want more space and affordable space, and that's sending many of them to the suburbs. This is something of an identity shift for a hipster generation known for its urban lifestyle. And this shift has an impact because more and more millennials are buying property.
What we've actually seen for the third consecutive year is that they are the largest segment of home buyers in the market.
Jessica Louts is the director of research for the National Association of Realtors. Millennials make up two-thirds of first-time homebuyers, and Louts says they have fairly conservative tastes.
80% are purchasing a single-family detached home, so a place that has three bedrooms, two baths, your very traditional home structure.
This trend is something Allison Bernstein knows a lot about. She's the founder of Suburban Jungle Realty, aimed at millennials buying in the suburbs.
We always joke and we say our job is 98% therapy and then 2% the actual, you know, real estate deal.
As part of that therapy, Bernstein asks potential clients to take an online questionnaire.
What ends up happening, surprisingly, is after they kind of go through their inventory and wish list, they actually go back to the positives of how they grew up.
But Bernstein says her clients want suburbs with a twist, preserving some elements of urban life.
They want a great education and an organic market down the street.
And walkable neighborhoods. These desires have triggered changes in some suburbs, especially those closest to urban centers. They're experimenting with repurposing malls and parking lots into green space, creating retail hubs, and investing in public transportation.
People really kind of want the anti-suburb suburb.
After all, if millennials can reinvent city living, why not reinvent suburbs, too? In Chicago, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Thanks, Nova. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.